Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Thursday, July 10, 2014. The European Union is expected to impose sanctions on South Sudanese leaders who are blocking the IGAD-led talks. In a moment, we are going to hear more about that in a live interview. And South Sudanese women say they should be included in the Addis Ababa peace talks once the talks are back on track.
Women of South Sudan are crying, asking politicians, why are you killing us this year? Nowadays, you can kill someone you do not have any grudge with, and all these were brought by politicians.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The European Union announced today that it is on the brink of imposing sanctions on South Sudanese officials whom it accuses of standing in the way of peace. The EU says the sanctions are only a first step against those who have blocked the IGAD-led peace talks, violated ceasefire, and committed serious human rights abuses during the nearly 7 months of fighting. Nick Westcott, the Managing Director for Africa of the EU Diplomatic Corps, is live with us from Brussels. Mr. Westcott, welcome and thank you for speaking with us.
Good evening.
Good evening. And what exactly do the sanctions include? And can you confirm that they target military officials from both sides?
The EU will be imposing tomorrow targeted sanctions on two military leaders, and the sanctions comprise a visa ban to prevent them traveling to the European Union and an asset freeze on any funds, finances that they may have within the European Union. And we have selected the people on the basis of those who have major responsibility for the recent violence in the country, those who are spoiling the peace process, breaching the ceasefire agreement and responsible for serious human rights abuses.
And why is the European Union threatening sanction now? Why not when the US did 2 months ago?
We marked yesterday the third anniversary of South Sudanese independence. I was there 3 years ago in Juba for the event, and I never believed that in 3 years' time we would be brought to this situation. But the people of South Sudan do not deserve what has happened to them. Over 10,000, we understand, have died in the civil conflict. 1.5 million have been displaced. 400,000 of them are outside the country. They've had to flee as refugees. And another 100,000 are sheltering in safe haven under the UN protection within the country. And this is a major humanitarian and civil disaster. We could not wait any longer. We have throughout given full support to the countries of the region in IGAD, the regional organization, in trying to broker a peace agreement. And we have given the leaders time to try and reach agreement and implement a ceasefire and come to talks. They are not doing so. The time has come when we have to signal, as we said from the start, that if they cannot reach a peaceful agreement, we will take action to target those who are responsible. And we will not wait longer. Now is the time we need to send a signal that we were serious about that. This is a first step to signal now that unless the talks resume within the deadline set, unless they are substantive negotiations that include all the parties concerned and are aimed at implementing the ceasefire and finding a political solution, then we will take more steps.
And when are the sanctions likely to be imposed? In other words, when will we know who is being sanctioned?
The decision will be published tomorrow. And as I say, it will be a first step. We will see what happens. We hope the message is loud and clear that for the international community, including the European Union, it is no longer acceptable that the two sides will not talk to each other, that they will not stop fighting, and that they will not seek some political settlement. They must take those steps. Otherwise, there will be further steps in the future. But the first step is tomorrow, and we will publish exactly who is concerned. But other people should take note that we are not going to stop there unless the fighting stops, unless the peace talks start in a real substantive way.
The EU had an arms embargo on Sudan before South Sudan became independent. Do these sanctions include an arms embargo?
It does. The arms embargo is already in force on South Sudan. No EU member state is free to sell arms. We understand that both the government of South Sudan and the rebels are still purchasing arms. And we think it is important that action is taken at a higher level, ideally in the United Nations, to prevent the two sides receiving further supplies of arms. That is something that the UN Security Council will need to discuss and decide in due course. I know that the regional organizations are also considering whether they should impose more drastic sanctions. So I think the leaders of South Sudan must recognize that the world will not any longer sit by and allow them simply to fight over the spoils. There has to be a political negotiation. There has to be an inclusive political system.
Well, Mr. Nick Wesco, that's all the time we have for you for today. Thank you for speaking with us.
Thank you.
That was EU's Nick Westcott speaking from Brussels about the European Union's threat to slap sanctions on South Sudanese officials who are standing in the way of peace. The government in Juba reacted swiftly to the EU announcement. Information Minister Michael Makuei says the decision is based on wrong information and will not help to end the nearly 7 months old conflict in South Sudan. Philip Aleu has more from Juba.
Mr. Makuei insists that the government of South Sudan is committed to bringing peace to South Sudan. He says outside interference will only make that task harder.
Anybody who tries to intervene and try to apply sanctions on any of the parties is actually contributing towards the complication of the process. The government of South Sudan has been very clear, and the last talks which were called off on a clear statement from IGAD that the rebels have boycotted the talks. Where does the government of South Sudan come in to be sanctioned?
Officials in Brussels say that the sanction will be imposed on military officers from both sides of the conflict in South Sudan. But Makuei says officials on the government side should not be sanctioned. He says they have shown restraint and not breached the ceasefire, even though they have come under repeated attack by the opposition. Makuei says the EU decision to impose sanctions is based on unbalanced information on the ground.
Because after all, if you say I'm sanctioning us because it's obstructing peace, how did you come to that conclusion? Decisions which are taken based on biased reports that are presented. So that is the situation. I don't know how will they apply their sanctions.
Makuei reacted the same way when U.S. President Barack Obama signed an executive order in April threatening to freeze the assets of and impose travel bans on anyone found to have committed or fomented violence in South Sudan or to have blocked the peace talks. The United States imposed targeted sanctions 2 months ago on Maria Chan Wong, a government military commander, and Peter Gadet, a military leader loyal to former Vice President Riek Machar. The regional body mediating South Sudan peace talks, the Intergovernmental Authority on Development, or IGAD, suspended the negotiations indefinitely last month after opposition delegate refused to take part, saying the peace talks gave no voice to the hundreds of thousands displaced by the conflict or civil society opposed to the government. For BOA News, I am Philip Aleu in Juba.
The African Union has extended its mandate of the Commission of Inquiry on South Sudan by 3 months. The mandate, which was due to expire this month, now runs until September. The commission, led by former Nigerian President Olusegun Obasanjo, was set up in May by the African Union Peace and Security Council to investigate human rights abuses and violations of humanitarian law during the conflict in South Sudan. When it has completed its investigations, it will make recommendations on how to heal and reconcile South Sudanese on accountability and institutional reforms in the country. Members of the commission asked for mandate to be extended so that they can consult with South Sudanese in all 10 states and in the diaspora before writing up their final report. Women are demanding they be included in the South Sudan peace talks once those talks get back on track in Addis Ababa. As Santo Monut Ayuel reports for VOA from Kwajok, female lawmakers from Warap State held a two-day workshop to hear each other's testimony and to demand an end to the violence.
Speaking through tears on Sunday, Teresa Nyekin, an internally displaced person in Warab State, says the ruthless killing of thousands of innocent South Sudanese civilians was caused by politicians. She appealed to peace mediators to expedite the peace process so that the survivors of what she called a senseless war are spared from more headache and pain.
Women of South Sudan are crying, asking politicians, why are you killing us this year? Nowadays, you can kill someone you do not have any grudge with, and all these were brought by politicians. I'm appealing to mediators to bring peace so that the few who are alive do not die.
Toyin South County Women Representative Mary Kasi says women must be included in the peace talks in order for there to be lasting peace in South Sudan.
We need to bring a woman from the grassroots, those especially in the village and in the Boma. They don't know what's going on. The peace is not just only for us with the Taiwanese, with the people who are dedicated by the peace, for all the people who are here in South Sudan. We need peace, the real peace, everlasting peace.
Alec James, secretary of the Warab Women Union, says women support dialogues and peaceful resolution to the crisis and not necessarily the formation of a transitional government.
I see this transitional government will not work. If we accept this transitional government, everyone go and come back to claim that he's have another position.
Members of Women's Caucus in South Sudan National Parliament said they will continue to hold consultation with women groups and IDPs about the prospects of inclusivity in the Addis Ababa peace negotiation. Honorable Matare and Grace, who leads the delegation, says talking to women around the country is important because women usually bear the brunt of war.
We want to know whether they are aware of the IGAD, who are the main negotiators of our peace between the government and the rebel, and the proposed transitional government from Ethiopia, whether they are aware of it, and what do they say about it. And another one, what do they know about the national dialogue, and what they recommend for us to take forward.
The workshop was organized by the South Sudan Democratic Engagement and Observation Program and the Crisis Management Initiative in Kwajok. 24 participants drawn among women groups from 6 counties of Warao State, the Abyei region, and IDPs in Warao State attended the two-day event held on Saturday and Sunday. For BOA News, I am Santino Manudayuel in Kwajok, Warao. Stay.
From Wara, we now move to Yambio. Local communities in Akorobodi in Yambio County are beginning to sell fish to the state 6 months after receiving small tilapia from World Vision. As Gift Friday reports for VOA from Yambio, the fish farm was established by 15 members who use the proceeds from selling second-hand clothes provided by the Catholic Diocese of Tambora, Yambio.
It marks the first time in Western Equatorial State that World Vision's Food for Asset program is coming to fruition. Under the program, fingerlings are provided by World Vision to fish farmers, including 18 youths in Akorobodi, who in turn, Clement Salvatore, chairperson of the Akorobodi Fish Farming Association, says they constructed 2 fish ponds. He says the fish pond measures 51 by 15 meters and has about 3,600 small tilapia. The second pond, which is 45 by 15 meters, contains about 2,700 fish. Salvatore says the fish have multiplied and now the farm association can now supply the state and neighboring states with affordable, good tasting fish.
So since this is the beginning, we cannot start the things expensive. You bring 10 pounds, we can give you also a size of to be sold at 10 South Sudanese pounds.
Salvatore says the aquaculture project will be expanded in the future. and is encouraging the state's youth to take up fish farming.
We need to work hard. We need to create self-employment. Not only that, asking for jobs, but we have all the resources on the ground. So we need to commit ourselves to work together so we will achieve our goals.
Akoroboji resident Livia Oliver says she is grateful to World Vision for the support, but many challenges lie ahead.
Lack of finance, whereby we can construct more, but we don't have finance. Lack of enough equipment like wheelbarrows, oars, access for maintaining the ponds. Technical training to some staffs on how to construct fish ponds. Fencing of the ponds. Place is just empty. There is no security.
Peter Julius, the headman of the area, says he hopes this is the start of more fish ponds.
We are saying it's an opportunity for us from God in heaven. This is the first time for us, and to be with fish pond, this is a chance for those outside to continue coming here.
Najin Tuluka says she has come to realize that women, when committed, can do something. As she bought the fish, she says she has seen the fruits of the work done by women.
As I talk, I'm very happy because the work we have been doing, I have seen the fruits, and it has raised the name of the people of Akoroboji.
World Vision's Journal Acting Program Manager Admire Nyati says fish farming is a risky adventure since tilapia are prone to many types of diseases. But he hopes more of the community will get involved.
We also expect them to allow other farmers to come and learn from them, because this is one of the most important objectives. And that way, the knowledge that has been transferred to them from the ministry will easily go to the community at large.
Nyati says the partnership with World Food Program, the ministry, and the community should continue so that the same activities are expanded to other counties of the state. For VOA News, I'm Gift Friday in Yambio.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Sadly, sexual attacks on women occur in many circumstances in many communities, and the victims are not at fault. Sexual violence is a serious crime. Individuals that have been attacked should seek immediate medical attention. In addition to pregnancy, their psychological dangers and the risk of sexually transmitted diseases such as HIV. That's why victims should seek medical help immediately. Physical and psychological trauma must both be treated quickly. It's also important that people do not blame the victims. Hopefully, with family and community support, the healing can begin.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, should the practice of giving people tribal marks come to an end? We'll take a look at that when we come back.
You don't want to miss VOA's South Sudan in Focus. You can hear us on one of our FM affiliate stations around the country or on the web at voanews.com/South Sudan. In Juba, listen to South Sudan in Focus at 8 p.m. on 93.5. You can also find us on shortwave at 11995, 13870, and 15180 kilohertz, or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
how can overcrowding in prisons be prevented?
By building more facilities, by utilizing the empty lands that we have around and building more prisons.
I think by introducing some prohibition works, like they need to do some street work, do the government job that they offer to people. People who's caught by a crime should do that job.
It can be prevented by giving a quick judgment to crimes, and at the same time provision for more facility for numbers of people.
Crowding in a prison can be prevented if the government can look into cases and they can solve the cases. You know, when you don't, the reason why there is overcrowding in the prison, the government doesn't solve the problem of those who are in a prison. Some are just abandoned just like that one.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. Health officials in Warab State say the number of patients seeking treatment for malaria has gone up sharply since the start of the rainy season. The situation is so serious that patients and medical personnel are turning to the state and central government for help, as Santino Monut Ayuel reports from Warab.
Santo Aluong lives in the main Gumel settlement for displaced persons and returnees in Warab State. He walked 10 kilometers to Kwajoga State Hospital, where he started showing the symptoms of malaria. He says if people could seek care near their homes and if the national and state authorities would ramp up their efforts to prevent the mosquito-borne illnesses and contain the outbreak, many lives could be saved.
All patients across Warab State are suffering from this malaria. The state authority should also have a connection with the central government to increase the supply of medicine so that the people should at least be rescued from wherever they are, because some are traveling from faraway distance to the state capital.
Kwajoga State Hospital Director Dr. Bright Millis says malaria is a major health concern this year. Since the start of the rainy season in April this year, he says the majority of patients who have been admitted to the hospital have been diagnosed as suffering from malaria.
Some came and died within the time that you never do the procedure or investigation. So you cannot put that as a case of malaria, you cannot exclude the malaria. So we consider them 90% are malaria cases.
Last year, around three-quarters of patients who were admitted to Kwajoga Hospital had malaria. This year, the number of people infected with malaria is around 90%. Melis expects that malaria has gone up sharply this year because there are more female and plus mosquitoes around.
We have a stream and we have a stagnated water all over the town. And we have a grass. These are the predisposing factors to increase the number of mosquitoes. When there is increase in number of mosquitoes, usually the affected case increase.
Female and all feel is mosquito pick up the parasite that causes malaria when they bite people who have the disease. They pass it on to someone else when they bite again. Melis says people should take more measures to avoid getting the disease. These include sleeping under mosquito nets, using insect repellent, and wearing long sleeve shirts and trousers. He says hospital does not have enough medicine to treat all patients who are being admitted with malaria.
In the rain season this year, we didn't receive even the single drop from the national government. They have to increase the commitment. They have to increase their support. They have to follow up the supply to the different states, not to Warab State alone, but to all the states.
The Director General of Warab State Ministry of Health, Dr. Gwengding Aler, says shortage of medicine has been reported to Juba, and they have begun to send malaria medication to Warab.
The drug arriving, and most of the counties like Gabriel West, they receive their drugs, and then Tui also receive their drugs, and Toyin Source. The only three counties which are cut off by this rain season, which is Gabriel East, and Toyin East, and Toyin North, their drugs will be reaching after 2 days from today.
Agweg says the ministry is distributing mosquito nets to try to stop the spread of the disease, which kills nearly 1 million people in sub-Saharan Africa every year. Reporting for VOA, I am Santino Manuda Yuel in Kwajoga, Warab State.
Some South Sudanese youth are calling for a ban on tribal marks, saying the practice is irrelevant to the new generation. They also say the marks are a hindrance to national unity. The call follows recent national workshop on peace and reconciliation for more than 50 youth from across the country. Mungume Devs Rakarinj has more for VOA News from Juba.
Tribal marks are a common cultural practice among South Sudanese who use it as a rite of passage into adulthood. The marks vary from one community to another and are usually inscribed on parts of the body, often the forehead. But young people like 20-year-old Gwak Philip Aleu from Western Bahar Ghazal State say armed combatants are using the culture marks as a way to single out tribal identities of community members who are their enemies.
There are very many that have been identified in that way because in the war-affected areas like in Malakal and Bentiu, they were using those bases. You see, even in Juba here, some cases were seen in that similar scenario where they find if you, they know that your marks are the ones of the Nuer and then it, the Dinka that has come, or a soldier is a Dinka whose parents have been killed in Malakal, then he takes a revenge.
Aleu says the practice is outdated and should end.
With the current civilization, it doesn't look well even if you go outside South Sudan. Some people who do not have never seen such kind of marks, they begin looking at you as a strange person. Instead of trying to listen to what you are saying, they are trying to look at the marks and how they were. So your points of view will not be taken the way you wanted them to be.
Aleu realizes that most older people will not embrace the idea of ending this centuries-old culture practice. And 70-year-old John Booth Yol is one of them.
These identification marks have always made a man very brave. When you have them, you cannot fear an enemy. You can fight as a man.
62-year-old Dak Wong from Akobo County in Jonglei State also insists that tribal marks are an important part of South Sudanese culture and should continue.
This is our heritage that was introduced many years ago. The tribal marks are part of our customary law that governs the people and helps in identifying someone who has been killed for compensation. You cannot ban them.
John Grace was elected by her colleagues to chair the youth wing at the National Platform for Peace and Reconciliation. Her job involves educating young people about the negative effects of tribal marks. She says her group will soon start a media campaign to gain momentum for abolishing tribal marks.
In other tribes or in other people's culture, it is very important to them. But also we need to tell them the disadvantages of these marks in some extent, if they could really realize that having marks sometimes may cause problem. They should really look into some ways of how to stop it.
Grace says the bottom line is encouraging the nation's youth to help restore peace in their country in any way they can, which she believes includes ending the practice of culture marks. For VOA News, I am Ogumedev Surakarinj in Juba.
That's our show for this Thursday. We now leave you with the song Heroes of Our Nation by Victoria Ole. We have been listening to Victoria Ole with that song, Heroes of Our Nation.